Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Investing in Real Estate. I'm your host, Clayton Morris. This is the show where we focus on buy and hold real estate for the purposes of creating passive income. We also overcome limiting beliefs on this show. We talk about wealth consciousness and helping all of you out there overcome some of those limiting beliefs and take action to build a better life for you and your family. And whatever road you take, we hope that it's real estate. We hope that you're building wealth the right way. And we always have a lot of great guests here on the show who can help us kind of step outside of those limiting beliefs. You know, if you think that you've lived in a box your whole life, that you can only achieve certain things, we love to have guests here on the show that can help you see beyond those limiting beliefs, those four walls that you've built around yourself. And that's what today's guest is all about. My guest today is Dr. Stephen Graves. He's a strategist, an executive coach, and an author. He's the author of the book, The Hero Leader. And it's really around general leadership, but he really talks about on his blog at stephengraves.com, strategy, leadership, and impact. And he helps coach massive CEOs of big companies and small companies, and he's helped them overcome all sorts of obstacles on their way to success. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Clayton. Glad to be here. Look forward to joining you.
Well, it's a real treat to have you here on the show. Tell me, how did you get started in this entrepreneurial journey? Obviously, now you become a doctor, you coach all sorts of leaders around the world. How did you get started?
That's a great question. Probably an hour conversation by itself. You know, I just kind of backed into it. Actually, I knew early on that I wanted to, it might sound funny, but I wanted to be kind of in my zone by the time I was 35. And that sounds like a really long period of time, especially for a millennial mindset in today's world. But, you know, I mean, I tried a bunch of stuff. I'm entrepreneurial at my core, but I wanted to really be in my tight zone of where I could overlap my, you know, kind of the critical requirements of any job that I was doing every day and kind of how I'm best wired, how to overlap those two. And so I kind of beat it by a few years, but I've really backed into it. You know, my formal education is actually in kind of philosophy and theology, but I've always had a real business wiring bent, and I love to help leaders walk alongside them to really answer the most strategic issues facing their, you know, kind of their world and their purview right there. So it's just a personal journey. It's kind of me trying to find a good overlap of how I'm wired, how I'm gifted, what I enjoy doing, and what I want to do every day, and then how to actually, you know, generate a business and build a career on it.
That's great. That's great. Tell me a little bit about the new book and tell me about The Hero Leader. How'd you come up with that?
Well, you know, a few years ago, I'd always published with traditional publishers. And a few years ago, I decided to try to write some shorter books that I felt like were a little bit more straightforward, just hit the ground running at 30 miles an hour and just really tackle a certain topic. And what had happened is I had taken a young CEO. So I work with established CEOs of huge global companies. I also work with private company leaders, entrepreneurs, and owners of companies, but I also work with just a collection of gunslinging entrepreneurs. Love it. Have done that years in a row. And, you know, they're always one step away from either making a giant pile of money or falling off the cliff again into the abyss somewhere. And
right.
So I had this one CEO, and he had built up a really nice media company over a few years. And he was trying to figure out whether he should sell his company or he should double down, take another round of capital investment, and just really kind of jump the S curve and grow to the next level. And I mean, you know, and let's just say he was in the $50 to $100 million range of a company. And I mean, he built a fantastic company, but the way he was a learner, his primary learning style was to go and listen and dialogue and just engage people. And so I took him on a little CEO tour. And we went to a certain part of our country and spent time with four, five, six CEOs. And every one of our meetings, we asked the question, in case he was going to stay, in case he wanted to stay and not sell and just stay and rebuild the company to the next level, we asked the question, hey, if you were hiring a bunch of senior leaders, what would their profile look like? What's the profile of someone at your level that you're hiring? And it was amazing. Clayton, the answer was exactly almost verbatim, the same answer from all these different CEOs representing different industries, different contexts, different backgrounds, different ages. And they all said basically that the best leader in a big global way, the best leader is not someone who's really good at one thing, and then they basically outsource everything else or they staff around them. Now, I'm not saying I disagree with the idea of strength finders and any of that. I agree with that in theory. But as far as day-to-day, the day-to-day rigor of actually delivering leadership, a leader has to really be, and this was their term, a leader has to be competent in a lot of things. You can't just be great at one thing and then you're not good at a bunch of other stuff. For example, a senior leader, they better be good at least at understanding numbers, but they better be pretty good at people as well. You know, they better be pretty good at being able to focus down on a certain one thing, but they also better be pretty good at being able to globally dance across the top and understanding a whole thing. They better be good at kind of focusing on leading others, but also leading themselves and having a heart and using your head and on, just so it was this idea that great leaders in today's world really are they're a composite of a number of skill sets, not just one exaggerated one. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And when you looked at these leaders who were improving themselves, they weren't just static or, you know, not moving forward. What were they doing to improve themselves? I mean, it's fine. Like, I run a company. A lot of our listeners run small businesses and some don't, you know, some work a 9-to-5 job and that's okay, but we all want to improve. And if we can learn from these leaders to take next steps, I think we can all really benefit from that.
Yeah. Great question. It's a really insightful question. You know, we all have blind spots. And so to think that we don't is crazy. We don't see them. If we saw them, they wouldn't be a blind spot. I mean, kind of like, aha, you know. And so, but we all have blind spots in our leadership, even in our character. We don't wish that was true, but we all have those. So we have some areas we need to grow in spite of ourselves. I kind of lay those over to the side. And if somebody can help me spot a blind spot in my world and grow in it, great. But besides that, there still are some areas that most people who have any level of self-awareness, and that's a big term, I'll come back to that in a second. If a leader has good self-awareness, we already know some things that we really need to try to grow and develop and improve in. And so what I typically like to do is this. Instead of someone creating the perfect picture of, and this is the reason I use the term hero leader, instead of trying to create the perfect picture of some superhero leader that has everything buttoned up, they have no shortfalls, they have no weaknesses, they're like the perfect composite of everything. Instead of doing that, pick out one or two things that you know you want to really try to make an improvement on. Instead of trying to change 10 things, pick one thing. If you're impatient as a listener, if you always have a bias toward a certain personality, if you don't know how to lead people who disagree with you, if you don't know how to have a hard conversation, if your risk profile is really, really creating a ceiling for your company right now, and you need to somehow learn how to embrace a little bit more risk, or on and on and on. I mean, we could list just hundreds and hundreds of either attitude things, behavior things, knowledge areas, or skill areas. That's usually where leadership comes down to. It comes down to a skill, a behavior, an attitude, or a knowledge area. And so pick one or two things in one or two of those. Don't pick a dozen things that you're trying to become the superhero tomorrow. And just pick one or maybe two. But be very intentional about it. Create a certain structure around it, some accountability. Learn about it and then try to make some incremental change where you go from a 2 to a 3 or a 4 to a 5. And then look over your shoulder and say, wow, man, look, I've really improved in this one area. Be sure to ask people, hey, do you think I grew in this area? I'm trying to be a better listener. Would you give me a score? And what that does is it takes away from me by myself always being my scoreboard. And I'm a huge believer that if somebody has a low self-awareness, it's really hard for them to ever grow. So people who have a good self-awareness, that's people who usually are developing and growing better in life.
Good self-awareness. I've never thought about it that way before. And is it also, is it being willing to have humility? Where does humility?
Absolutely. I mean, here's the deal, man. I know you've led enough conversations and you're a good enough leader by yourself that intuitively we know that's right. In today's world, you know, there's different grids that always people use. There's the hungry people. The perfect ideal employee is someone who's hungry or they're eager or they have some hustle, whatever you want to call it. They also are going to be some kind of smart. And some people call that acumen. Different people have different terms, but there's also going to be some kind of humility or self-awareness. That's the third term, generally speaking. And without humility or without self-awareness, generally, not only are you not going to grow, but people really don't enjoy working with you. If you're the leader, they're not going to enjoy your leadership style because you're always the expert, you're always right, you're always the king, you're always in the middle of the stage, the star has to always be over you, the spotlight's always shining on you. With humility, you're able to say, you know what? Sure, I'm the leader. Sure, I got a PhD, but you know what? Dang, that doesn't mean I really have learned how to work with this person, or that doesn't mean I know how to do this kind of technology. That's the reason reverse mentoring is such a big deal in our culture today. Take a classic baby boomer executive. Let me give you an example. I was on a plane. Last week coming back from Florida, and the flight attendant basically came on and said, "Hey, listen, it's time to turn your phones off. Put your phone on airplane mode," and went through the whole litany, and then stopped and said, "And by the way, if you're over 50 and you have no idea what I'm talking about, find the youngest child close to you, give them your phone and ask them to do it." And so the point is that a lot of times, you know, an executive in today's world, they don't know as much about technology as say a millennial might. Without humility and without some sort of teachableness and self-awareness, they might not have the backbone to say, "Hey, listen, would you mind leading not just our company, but even me in figuring out how to think about social platforms and the technology, you know, tsunami that's happened in the last 3, 4, 5, 10 years. So couldn't agree more. Humility is critical. And here's the deal, Clayton. I'm not the person who scores me as being a humble person. You are. It's the people I work around. It's the team members I work alongside. It's my boss or it's the people below me. That's the people who give me my self-awareness score and my humility score, not me.
So true. You know, funny little story, totally a side story, but I was out this morning actually walking my little girl. She was up at like 5:30 in the morning. She's 10 months old. So rather than keeping the rest of the house awake, I slapped her into the stroller and took her for a walk. And out in the neighborhood, the sun was coming up and a police officer drove by my town. And then he circled back around and he waved and he said, I watch your show all the time and, you know, just want to say hello. And I said, "Well, thank you for your service. I love what you do protecting our community." And we just got into a great conversation and we had this whole discussion about, you know, he was talking about in the force where he is in the police officer force and then in television and so forth. And he said, "You know, I find that just there's a lack of humility lately for people having an awareness about where they've come from and having empathy towards other people." And we just got in this like 20-minute discussion. I mean, it was the most random. I was like, "What am I doing at 6 a.m. talking to a police officer about humility and ego and all of these pieces of leadership that I try to, you know, try to be aware of and have this awareness?" Because you can be in conversations with people and you can start to let ego get involved in your conversations with people where you feel the need to one-up somebody else. And I think it's so easy when you're starting out to kind of put on a show for people and pretend maybe you're something you're not, and you have that sort of imposter syndrome about you. And then I think you get to a certain point, maybe in your career, where you are able to kind of smile, look back at that person who was putting on airs, you know, and trying to be somebody they weren't.
To your point, to stay on your story this morning, which is fantastic, by the way. Humility has a way of pulling me toward you and you toward me. Like somebody who's humble usually has an element of transparency to them. There's an authentic, There's an authentic component. Now, that and by the way, humility is not a personality trait. It's not. There's some people who are just they're wired from birth to be out there. They're at large. Their voice is big. Their body's big. Their personality's big. And if you happen to put them in a performer wiring, you know, if they happen to be a performer from a kind of a skill set, a job assignment or whatever, I mean, that's somebody who's just, man, they're big. They are large and in charge. We know all kind of people that way. So humility is not a personality type. It's an inner posture of how I think about myself and the people around me. That's, you know, and so when I have that, that's what pulls me towards somebody who has a humility. And that's what, I'm able to have that most of the time, that's what pulls me toward you when we talk. But when the opposite happens, we know it's just like, you know, combative magnets or something. It just repels each other. Because, right. I mean, you know, if I'm working for you and I know you have no humility, I mean, I'll tolerate you and I'll bite my bottom lip, but it's just a matter of time till I can find out either that I have to beat you, I have to find another place to live or whatever. So I couldn't agree more. Humility is a really, really important a component in that composite scorecard of what a great leader looks like.
So true. Today's podcast is brought to you by Jet Smarter, the mobile app revolutionizing the private air travel industry. Now, unlike jet cards or fractional ownership, Jet Smarter lets you create on-demand flights anywhere on the planet or reserve seats on shared flights worldwide, all in minutes from a single mobile app. JetSmarter is also the only private flight service that lets you share your extra charter seats with fellow members in exchange for flight credit. You can swap them out. There's no prepaid hours, no expensive brokers are involved, just innovative air travel at your fingertips so you can experience aviation as it was meant to be. Members enjoy unparalleled travel benefits, including complimentary round-trip seats on global shuttle routes, plus access to shared and private charters around the world. Discounted seats for guests, helicopter transfers in select cities, VIP member-only events, and much, much more. With JetSmarter, flying private is now within reach. Download the JetSmarter app today and use the code SMART, S-M-A-R-T, SMART, to become part of the world's largest members-only private aviation community and discover a smarter way to fly. For full details, visit jetsmarter.com.
You know, you write about strategy and leadership and impact. Take me through some of those. And, you know, what does it look like to have impact when you're a leader or just in your person? I mean, because we're a leader of our family, right? And doesn't have to be a leader of a 3,000 employee corporation, right?
Yeah. Totally. Well, you know, I mean, impact is one of those terms. One of the reasons why I've loved studying it and thinking about it for decades now. Is because impact is one of those terms that sometimes it's in the eye of the beholder. Sometimes it's a little hard to define. You know, you have a lot of nonprofits that will carry the flag of impact. And some of them are having impact, some are having more than others. You know, you have causes that are attached to all kind of for-profit enterprises in today's world, you know, from the Tom Shoes to the Warby Parkers, all the way over to a Walmart or Amazon or anybody who has a cause that they're trying to attach to their big enterprise mission. So impact is a little hard to define, but I try to bring it down into pretty defined not a formula, but pretty defined terms, where basically impact is where I'm through my influence, whether it's through my leadership or my money or my leverage of experience, or I can hook you up to somebody else and connect you up, or I can pour some courage into your soul for the day by just smiling at you or doing what your police officer did. And then what you did to the police officer, where you poured a little inspiration back in and you said, man, thanks so much for doing what you guys do. I mean, I can't fathom being a police officer in today's world. I mean, I just can't imagine the risk that they do every single morning.
Right.
Period. And so with you doing that, you know, you're having some impact. Now, when you measure that, that's where it gets a little challenging, because you're able to say, well, you know, am I having the impact that I could have, should have, want to have? Most impact starts off with me, either me personally or some organization, at least having some element of intentionality. In other words, I'm willing to say I'd like to make sure that I'm having an impact and I'm progressing at having an impact. I'm not just a single bottom line person. I'm a multiple bottom line person in the way I operate. Yes, being profitable is important. Yes, making money is important. If somebody's not making some money, then the whole thing starts falling down somewhere. And so, yeah, it's important. But at the end of the day, there's got to be some other bottom lines. You know, I've got to be making a difference in society. I've got to be making a difference in the people in my orbit, the people circling my orbit that are breathing the same oxygen I'm breathing, to speak of, you know, I mean, in my world. And I need to be making a positive impact on the way they think, the way they behave, and the way they outlook life. And so it starts with some intentionality, where somebody says, you know what, I want to do more than just survive, make it about me, make a buck, you know, supply my ego interest in life and my hobbies, that kind of thing.
I love that. That's really strong. And, you know, you also write about strategy, and with the 5 minutes or so we have left, I'd love to talk about that, because so many people enter into, whether it's investing, they want to get a plan for their family, and they don't have a strategy. How do you encourage people to start building that, or laying the framework, the scaffolding for having a strategy in their life?
Yeah, that's great. Well, you know, I've got another book I wrote called Strategy 3.0. And in there, my premise is basically that we're operating in a brand new world. Some people still are operating with a strategy 2.0 mindset, where all you do is you reach out to the future, you paint some future state, you draw the picture, and then you just put your head down and execute against it for 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, whatever. Those days are gone. They're totally gone. You can't mindlessly and thoughtlessly simply be going through muscle memory and executing against some picture out there for 30 years without continually pulling your head up and assessing where life is, and then pivoting or iterating as business or landscape realities change. You know, for example, you mentioned your daughter this morning. Well, if you know, I mean, gosh, man, you know, when you get married or when you start having children, your whole idea of money changes a little bit. You know, it takes a little bit more. You have to account for things that you didn't account for back when you were single and just kind of floating from, you know, one thing to the next or whatever. And so there's a certain agility, there's a certain speed that has to accompany strategy in today's world. Has to. And what I typically like to do is I like to recommend to people that most good strategy starts with kind of what I would call the imagination stage. And the imagination stage is where you do create some sort of vision in front of you that you imagine out some number of years. It might only be 2 or 3 or 4 or 5. It's okay to think out way long term, but be pretty loose with that, because, you know, to think that you and I know exactly where we're going to be 20 years from now and exactly what life looks like, that's a little crazy, because stuff changes so much in today's world. But I do have to imagine around the bend. I got to imagine out a little bit. So good strategy starts with imagination or thinking, and then it goes taking all that thinking and sticking it into some kind of plan, some kind of coherent plan that makes sense. And then from that plan, making sure you have an instrument of implementation. You know, the best strategic plan in the world will never self-execute. They just don't do it. Plans don't self-execute. They have to have some sort of instrument of execution or implementation. And that instrument might be a person, a leader, a structure, a whatever. And so my guess is, Clayton, is that kind of formula of visioning or imagining forward, sticking it into some sort of sequential plan, and then making sure that there's some instrument of implementation or execution. My guess is that's exactly the kind of thing that you recommend to your followers and your tribe.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, we had a case study, a guest on our show, Pablo, and a lot of our listeners probably know him. He started out with no money. He lives in England. He wanted to buy properties in the United States. He didn't know how to do it. And we basically just kind of had a consultation kind of phone call here on the podcast where we started out and gave him some action steps. You know, these are the steps that you need to start taking to reach out, increase your circle, go, you know, private, find a private investor, lay out the properties that you want to buy. And he was able to come back in the next episode. He had done all of the things that we talked about. He'd taken those next steps. And then it's been a number of months. He's now taken those next steps. And I've been communicating with him over the past few months. And he's finally about to be able to finally buy a property. It took him over a year to do it. And there was probably 200 steps for him. He had no money. He lived in England. All of the steps that he had and hurdles he had to overcome in order to do it. And it looks like we're hopefully almost at that moment now where we are able to record that third and sort of final episode where he's actually been able to achieve it. But it took him all those steps in order to get there.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Yeah, that's exactly, you know, that's the way I approach strategy. And here's the deal. The funny thing is whether we're talking about a person buying a single house, or we're talking about a leader leading a small entrepreneurial startup business, or whether we're talking about somebody leading a big old $100 million complicated business, or we're talking about somebody leading a global multi-billion-dollar business. Strategy really is all about the same thing. It's imagining something different than what I have right now, thinking around the curves, around the bend, into tomorrow, and then somehow, you know, using insights, finding the one or two insights that those insights can really carry the choices I'm going to make, and then me making those choices and then just pivoting and iterating myself along in an agile way as, you know, as business realities and life realities change on me, as they often do and will do.
Well, this has been great, Stephen. I want to thank you so much for your wisdom, your insight, your humility, and coming on today's show and sharing with us. I'd love for our listeners to be able to dive into some of your books. We'll have links to your books and everything we talked about in today on our show notes page. If they just come over to our website, morrisinvest.com/podcast, we'll have it all right there. But Stephen, where can people connect with you?
Yeah, that's great, man. I'd love for them to follow my weekly blog or article at, you know, Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, StephenRGraves.com. And love to have them. It's free every week. It's just a short blog. It comes out on Tuesday, and it's around one of those three themes. And so love to have some people. And this has been a lot of fun, Clayton. Bravo and cheers to what you're doing. I love the premise of your business offering. And so cheers to you, man. This has been a lot of fun.
Well, it's been my pleasure to have you here on the show, and I'm sure my audience loved it as well. Thank you so much, Stephen. I really, really appreciate it.
Absolutely, my friend. Have a great day.
You too. And thanks to all of you for downloading and subscribing and making us a part of your weekly commute or weekly dog walking, whatever it happens to be. We always appreciate it. We'll be back on Monday with another episode of Investing in Real Estate. Now go out there, take action, become a real estate investor. But to have impact in your life and put a great plan together, build that strategy that Stephen talked about, and go out there and take action. Much love to you all. We'll see you next week, everyone.